Hi, this is
Katie and Eric.
From
we're gonna have to do this a couple times. Say hi. Okay, you want me to
do it? Are you sure you don't want to write it down?
I can do it. Hi, this is Katie and Eric from.
From Rider Ranch Cider Works in Santa Cruz County, California.
And you're listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 110. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, we are speaking to Eric and Katie Ryder of Ryder Ranch Cider. There'll be more on that chat in just a moment. Well, happy new year, Ciderville. It is a 2018, and whew, there is a lot going on as usual, but that's a Ciderville for you. And on the top of the block here, I want to make mention of a huge price drop in the Totally Cider Tour to the UK. You remember that trip I've been talking about for a while, right? Right smack in the middle of apple blossom time this coming April 25th to May 2nd. It's a full week. A full week of being in Totally Cider, having a meet-to-meet with the makers, walking around during apple blossom season in Herefordshire, in Somerset, getting up close and personal. So I am biting the bullet big time here, Ciderville, to try to get this trip launched. And I'm going to be very transparent with you. No one signed up for this trip. So this is a last-ditch effort. It's going out, and you have between now, today, January 3rd, and January 24th to put your deposit down for this trip. And what is the cost? Well, initially, it was $29.95, and we dropped it down to $21.01. That's nearly a $900 saving. That savings of $900 goes directly back into your pocket. On our end, we changed one thing mainly in the itinerary that you might notice, which is there's going to be a hotel change at Bath. So we'll be staying at the Hilton instead of the Abbey. Still a stellar site and location in the middle of the town. And I did a couple changes with some of the folks I was working with. And the main change for me is I'm not making a cent. I am also paying for my flight to get to the UK. Probably not the brightest bulb in the market in one way, but you know, that is how passion and love, sometimes it just makes us jump into the orchard because our nose is so filled with apple blossom that, you know, we're not seeing anything else but the good vibes. And that's how I roll. I mean, if I was on the Shark Tank, they would definitely kick me off. But there you have it. It's a leap of faith here. So there's 3 weeks you have, and I really recommend to not delay at this price because I'm sure hoping that we fill it up now as we took this major drop of $900 off of the ticket. You could email Jody at betweentrips.com. There's a link in the show notes. Go to the Totally Cider page at ciderchat.com. You'll see it there. If you have questions, email me, Rhea@ciderchat.com. But I'm not the person signing you up. We still have Jody there holding that piece of the pie. Once again, this is the Totally Cider Tour to the UK, traveling on April 25th through May 2nd, 2018, right smack in the middle of apple blossom time in Somerset and Herefordshire. Who we don't delay, sign up today. If you recall, there was an episode number 77, which was on the U.S. cider trends, and that was a presentation done by the Nielsen Rating Group. And they're really looking at what was happening in the U.S., but also internationally for the cider trends. You could listen to that episode number 77, or you could go to the Cider Chat YouTube channel and see both the slideshow presentation and listen to the episode at the same time, too. I really recommend that. Well, what you should know for the upcoming CiderCon, which is the United States Association of Cider Makers annual conference, Matt Crompton is going to be there. He has a presentation that is going to be, I believe it is on Thursday, the first full day of sessions. You can hear me doing the paper in the background. Yeah, right now it is, I see, Thursday. It's going to be an afternoon session, 3:45 to 4:30, and it's called How to Use Nielsen Data to Grow Your Sales. And that's with Caitlin Batgalia and Matt Crompton. And it's going to be looking at the nuts and bolts of the Nielsen on and off premise data, what it is, how to interpret it, how to use it to grow your sales. And while they are at CiderCon, they're also going to be asking for you to, if you're a, you know, a commercial cider maker, for you to submit your barcode, I guess it is, so that your cider can get into their data bank and they could start basically tracking and seeing where the sales are and how that's rolling. I think it's a great idea because I know as a podcaster, I really watch where my listeners are from, what my download numbers are to the best that I can. And here is another organization who's really working in conjunction with the United States Association of Cider Makers to really bring in data so that folks can start targeting those different markets. So check that out, both that episode number 77 or on the YouTube channel. Get the contact from Matt Crompton. I'm sure Caitlin would be full on that too. And find out how you could get your UPC, I think it is, barcode. I'm not really sure. It's that funky thing that you have on your products that when you're selling, and get that to them. In tandem with that, another thing you want to bring is cider to submit into the New York International Beer Competition. I know that says beer competition, but if you listen to episode 108, you heard from the alcohol professor, also known as Adam Levy, and he puts on these international competitions around the world. And he said that if there's enough cider submitted this year, and he's very close to the mark, he will start a new competition called the New York International Cider Competition. Why is that a cool thing for you? Well, one, you could bring your cider to CiderCon, give it to Adam. He will submit it for you. You don't have to pay for shipping, and you could bring enough to also put it into the Berlin competition too. That's Berlin, Germany, and not have to pay the shipping for that piece. So that's awesome. He's going to have a booth in the trade area of CiderCon. And the key thing here for this competition, which is really unique than others, is that only trade buyers are the judges. These are the folks who are looking at price point. So look for that link in the show notes, the New York International Beer Competition, and you could also get a link, a direct link to Adam's phone number if you have any questions there. So those are two little tips for coming up for CiderCon to really think about, getting your barcode for your cider in for Nielsen, and also getting your cider submitted now for two competitions coming up in 2018 that I think would really provide a lot of value back for commercial makers, getting your cider tasted by the folks who buy it to provide that to consumers. Pretty awesome, right? Okay. When we come back, we're going to go on to our main chat of the week. So it's about time you start getting that glass and filling it if you can. If you can. All right. We'll be right back. Thank you. I visited Rider Ranch Cider Works, based in Santa Cruz County. The actual location is between San Jose and Santa Cruz, California. And you have to kind of go up that long drive on 17, which is a really exquisitely beautiful ride. You're going past giant redwood trees. If you open up the window, you could start smelling that really kind of menthol-y eucalyptus smell that I just makes my heart drop every time I smell that, and really clears my mind, makes me feel at home. Well, that was kind of the area that Rider Ranch is based in. It's on a hillside of a mountain, so California, with these two hipsters. And they have a little mini tasting room that we visited. So you're going to hear this conversation going along. I arrived, two giant Great Pyrenees greeted me. And I saw both Katie and Eric and the kids up on the hill picking pears on this crazy ass landscape. I mean, seriously, it's like up and downhill. But I so fell in love with them and what they're doing, and certainly their cider. We drank their single variety Newtown Pippin, which was absolutely delicious, and also a plum wine. And there's a bit of a story around that too. So they'll be sharing that with you. It was a delightful visit, and we're looking at doing a cider dinner at their location that I said, if you set that up, I'm going to be heading back there. Because as you know, if you do know, I'm a little bi-coastal, heading back and forth to Santa Cruz where my family is. So it'll work out. So stay tuned for that. But in the meanwhile, let's not delay any further, because this is a fun chat, and I hope you fall in love with Katie and Eric as much as I did, because their passion and their pride really shines through in the conversation. So without further delay, let's now grab that glass and join this chat with Eric and Katie of Rider Ranch Cider Works in Santa Cruz County, California.
Make you a cocktail. It's actually what I would consider a traditional English cocktail, where you use a little bit of this plum wine to mix into our base Newtown Pippin, and then I have a brandied plum as well that I just drop in there.
Then what do you call that cocktail?
Oh, I think that they traditionally called jerk. That's what how they just, it was
it
served.
It should be served as a cocktail.
Yeah, that's how jerkum should be served, okay. Mixed with cider. A jerkum would be an additive to cider to help it have different complexity in the acid, so that the primary acid in here or in the apple is malic, and this is probably a tartaric or something like that. So that gives a more rounded palate with the
tartaric acid.
Yes, and because the plum has a jammy texture, right, that it helps add some of the body in the mouthfeel. It rounds out that mouthfeel, gives you better mouthfeel, gives you actually some legs in it, and there's greater tannins from the skins, right, because they're like little grapes. They come with the plum. Are very tiny, like little grapes, and so it comes out and gives you better tannins. We'll give you a sample.
It also ferment completely dry.
It doesn't ferment.
No.
So after a year, there's still 1.01.
And I wonder why it's not fermenting. Is it sorbitol? Or?
Maybe some sorbitol in there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't actually. That is part of his cellar master job.
So what are you thinking? Shall we sit down?
We can go to our little tasting room. It used to be called our Moonshiner's Cabin.
Oh, up there, huh?
Yeah.
Love that.
We actually started as an urban cider. We were going to do this, and we had some ideas to be more of an urban cidery. But as we were looking for a place
like a warehouse. Right. We got the idea that maybe we should look to replace our home instead, that was the better way to do it. And this place popped up. It'd been on the market for 2 months, and we just snapped it up.
And it's actually right off the highway, although who wouldn't have known, because that didn't work for me. But
you actually took the better drive.
I did. Well, it was really beautiful. You could smell the eucalyptus coming up. You could see the big trees coming up. It was really
stunning.
So down
there, you would have passed Glenwood Cutoff. As you were coming up, Glenwood and Glenwood Cutoff. That used to be the town of Glenwood.
Oh.
And this property was actually homesteaded by the people who founded the town of Glenwood.
Wow.
So, and our neighbors over here.
That's why you have the trees here.
Yeah,
that's
these old homestead orchard. Right
there. Yeah. Cool.
So the neighbors over here, that are over there through the woods, they bought this property, that property, and another 50 acres up there. Used to be all one property they bought from the Martin family in 1850.
Dang, you know, it seems like everything was starting around here for the Apple region around 1850.
Right.
Which makes sense, you know, right?
Yeah, that's when all the stagecoaches came and sort of had that.
All the stagecoaches from San Jose up to Santa Cruz.
Well, the port of Santa Cruz over to the port of even San Francisco.
This was part of the stagecoach route.
This actual property, or Glenwood Drive?
Both.
Glenwood Drive, and this was the top, and so go over to Old San Jose Highway and down
the road. Are not over that period of time. The roads are like, so about 200 years, that the roads aren't always the same. We have landslides and different things. So there was a crook road that came up here, and we imagine what that must have been used for. It's supposed to run through our property.
Road, and there's no road there.
There's no road.
Interesting. Wow.
Here's some of our plum trees. Yeah. Right up here that we pick all these ones. We just find the wild plums of the property.
I have a golden variety and a red variety. So I make more of a golden port. They're both, we'll taste it. It's kind of a little bit sour.
I'm going to run and grab the
You know, I want to, do you mind if I describe the land here a little bit? So, I came up a steep hill, and then I came down a steep hill to turn around the property here, and it's landscaped all on the side of a hill, which feels very European to me.
Right.
The soil looks sandy, but it's like, how would you describe the soil?
It's a clay-based soil.
Clay-based, okay.
Right, but it has quite a bit of sand involved in it, and we have one area over there that looked like it might have been the bottom of a lake at one point, and it's very sandy.
Interesting.
So, yeah, you're right, there's sand in there.
Do you get a lot of runoff then? Like, if you get the rains that we had.
This last year was particularly brutal. Right, so that a lot of our topsoil had gone, and so so it's washed off a lot of our topsoil. But my ultimate goal with this place is to do a regenerative forest.
Regenerative forest.
So I'd like to have.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, so you have all these like fruit trees that were dropped. Maybe people were on the stagecoats.
Right.
Spitting out the pits, and they just had these volunteer plum trees.
Old apple tree at one point. We have plum and pear.
And so what are you planning on doing then to kind of bring back the forest?
Well, what we would do is, so in a regenerative forest project, we would add different sort of beneficial plants. So plants that maybe attracted insects, or ones that naturally sort of protected the roots from other insects. So repelling certain types of insects and bringing in others. And then again, it would be a no-till situation. We're also trying to get it to maybe having some more, something that would be self-mulching. So using plants that would self-mulch.
Are these oak trees here?
These
are. What kind of oak are they?
There's some white
oak. California.
White oak and
tan oak.
Tan oak. Because, I mean, I have lots of oak trees where I'm from. And I was walking around the Henry Cowell, park.
Thing.
And I was like, that's an oak tree. But the leaves don't look different. Like an oak tree at all that I'm used to.
You can see up here.
This is also an oak tree, too.
Okay.
We have several different varieties.
Oh, I can see the leaves now. Yeah, yeah. Interesting.
California Bay Laurel.
Yeah.
A Toyon over here. And what else do we have? We had
Manzanita.
Madrone. The coastal pine, I think Monterey pine. But those all failed in the last drought. That most every single one of them. This is getting outside of their region,
right?
So you're pushing their native habitat to here, and in good years it seemed to work, but now they're drying out.
Really true, yeah. Look at that. Okay, so that's your quintessential oak leaf.
Yeah, and this is an oak here, too. So.
But this is a different kind of leaf. Yeah, interesting. That's what was a little bit confusing, because that's how we go with our identification, don't we?
Right.
These are the oaks.
That's one of my golden plums.
Wow.
Yeah, so I actually made a,
a
Japanese-style plum wine.
That is, you're making a Japanese-style plum wine out of a tree that's probably how many years old? How fast do they grow?
Probably at least 100. Right.
That's that's probably 25. Maybe. The tree on there is maybe a little bit older. I don't know. You know, they come up and they go down and then...
That's a pretty good girth, I would say, all the way around. It's like
we find all kinds 30 of inches. Stuff out here.
Yeah. Wow.
We had a rough winter.
Because of all the rain, you mean?
The rain and then the heat, so we're dealing with fire blight.
And we also knocked off a bunch of our buds. It was a bad year for wine as well.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
Well, our harvest, Jake, has for us is a lot less.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, an orchard that we got 2 tons from, we have 2.5 bins. So we have...
Wow. Oh, no, that's sad. That's hard.
Yeah.
Well...
And then we planted 40 trees this year here.
You planted how many trees here?
40.
where are they?
There's a whole bunch over here, and they're down to sticks because we have fire blight.
Now, this ain't going to be an easy place to harvest fruit.
Well, that goes down to the shaking.
Okay.
It's actually rather easy to shake them.
Okay.
And we put tarps down on the ground.
Okay, and do it that way.
So that's... plums.
Right, well, the first year I hired a boom lift, and that was... It's not economical.
Right.
And it was frightening.
And it was frightening because it would wave in the wind.
Oh my goodness. I'll tell you that. So we just climbed up from the home up to your moonshine. What would you call it?
The moonshine.
It used to be the moonshine.
It used to be a barn.
All right, Cider Shack works. We're all catching our breath right now.
Yes, we are.
That's kind of like the test. Okay, if you can make it up the hill...
We came the easy way.
I know that other drive was like steep.
That way.
That's like San Francisco going up and down.
Yeah, that way I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah,
I know. Why did I do this? I know.
This is a really sweet little tasting room. We described this as Ciderville. We said we came in. There's this nice little slab of wood, a little seat to sit on, beautiful crocheted topping here. You kind of get this like Western feeling, very quintessential of this region. It's very cozy. You know, you gotta seek out a place like this, you know you're in like magic land.
Right. I like to make it my sort of California idea of English cider. Village, you know, an English cider orchard, right? But we're very Californian. You cannot deny that.
No, cannot. Don't be denied.
The idea to move from our sort of like obsession with English culture into cider was easy.
This is our, we call it pre-prohibition pippin.
And this is what was sent to New York City.
This is.
Yes.
I could smell that, you know. I'm standing up right now. The glass is on the table. It's just wafting up here. Wafting. We'll work on it. Wait until I have a couple of sips of cider.
Wait until I revert to
Now, I want to say that before I take a sip of this, I was just walking by the trees that I believe these apples came from. And what stellar, beautiful, beautiful trees. You could feel their energy.
Yeah.
Like these kind of burly, you know, really...
gnarly trees.
Ooh, super. And I was like, when I heard that these are going to your place, I was like, oh, you are so...
So you notice one thing. Everybody else in the area is like done, and our fruit's still hanging on the tree.
Cheers.
Cheers. Best of luck to your future.
Thank you.
Decider.
Yes.
So we don't filter. We don't pasteurize.
Yes, it's good. And it's aged a year.
Well, so I've been really excited to taste this, and there's a couple things I get going on here. Is one, well, I actually am very surprised, because I was looking to see what the acidity was, but what's really being overshadowed right now is this intense apple taste.
Mm-hmm.
Really, the finish in the mouth, there's like that sweetness of the apple.
That's the sorbitol when we ask the grower to put it on the tree, to leave it on the tree to have it fully tree ripened, right?
It's kind so of we're
looking, yeah, they come yellow, sunburned, ugly fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So good though.
But it's so good, yeah.
So good. Single varietal Newtown Pippin, which is known as the Albemarle Pippin too.
Yeah. It's known as the what?
Albemarle.
Yeah. Albemarle.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Because it's really, it's coming from like New York State and then fanned off from there. And that there's this like bounty of it here in California just shows you the tenacity of the apple.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wow, that is a delightful, delightful cider.
Thank you. I'm really proud of this one.
You gotta be. You gotta be. That the clarity, so you said no filter.
Nope.
No filter, but completely clear.
Look at the carbonation is really nice.
The pearls.
Small bubbles coming up from the glass, just really consistent, which allows you to, it doesn't overwhelm the aroma. Beautiful. The color is like a golden straw color. I'm holding in the light. It's absolutely stunning. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nice.
This, this is the cider that we wanted to make from the very beginning.
Right.
And it was great working with Jake. See, he was out there in the orchard, and he'd test the bricks on it and the acidity. And
Darlene was out there doing it, too. We had, like, three of us testing the...
What were you getting for the acidity?
What did we get?
We're at 3.6 on the acidity when he picked it.
Wow.
And the bricks was 16...
Mm-hmm. We like to take a sort of a top and bottom approach. Yeah. So Eric is the cellar master, and I'm the master blender. So we sort of harken back to those sort of champagne roots. We come up with a product that is very much more of a champagne, like so the more of like a champagne, which really reflects my terroir as a cider maker. That this is something that I would like to drink. And you know, I think that if Eric had final say in it all, it would be a little bit more funky. And we do come out with some, you know, we try to sort of...
do like that funk.
I have a smoke cider.
You have a smoke cider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have one bottle from last year if you want to try it.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Are you kidding?
It was very popular. Oh, yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers.
All right. But I want to keep on hearing about this. So you're coming from two different approaches here. You say, Katie, you're the blender, a cider maker.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that work with, like, you know, husband and wife kind of team doing this?
Well, you can kind of see that reflected in our logo, where we take sort of a yin and a yang, where he's got his job as a cellar master, and that's a job, you know, complete with a set of expectations. And we sort of take all the sort of back-end work and all what your finished product, and even down to the label, is sort of the expression of my personality. So I tasted all along. I'm there at the orchard trying to figure out, like, okay, what is this going to taste like? What sort of yeast? We worked really closely with the laboratory to discuss which yeast we wanted. So if you notice that it isn't very acidic at all compared for a Newtown Pippin, it's very well balanced.
Really lovely.
And that is a reflection of my palate. And then speaking also with the laboratory to get the right yeast that would go ahead and reduce the acidity and round out the palate.
One of the things we go for also is something that's going to produce no SO2 or H2S.
Because I'm very sensitive.
Super clean.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So over the years, she's like, no, it's like sulfur. Try again.
So I have more of that taster palate.
Good. Yeah, that could be a tough thing, the sulfur. So how do you manage this sulfur, which is a big problem for people?
Through yeast. right?
Fermented through yeast, but it has to be a little bit more than just yeast.
It is. We are, so again, I'm very controlled. So what we did is our unit is completely temperature controlled. We ferment at 63 degrees.
So you're doing that all down at the house?
No, we're at the tank house. We'll go down there next.
Okay. We can go down there and show you our tank house. It's very
it's smaller than this.
Right. Is that in the ground? Because we're in California climate, so you're...
Oh, it gets very hot up here since we're above the inversion layer. So the fog rolls in and creates sort of a lower cold area, and then it pushes some of the heat up to us. So we can, we have very odd weather here.
Yeah. So it's a, we've got a tough shed, 120 square feet, and then it's insulated all the way around with R19 insulation.
Wow.
And then the walls have got the plastic stuff on it so they can be wiped down, and then it has a mini split air conditioning unit in it. So it keeps it at 63, 64 degrees all the time. Right. And well, that's another factor with picking the yeast is we want to pick something that's going to ferment down at that
cooler level.
Okay.
Right. So then we work really, that's where we work with the lab, where that we just try to sort of farm out some of the ideas that, you know, the laboratory has experts in this.
Who do you work with? What lab?
We work with Scott.
Scott Labs.
Okay.
Yeah, we just kind of say, this is what we're getting. They're really good about, like, I have this
great
odor and that. And they're like, well, try this and try that.
Good.
And
very good.
We also do, we take a slightly different approach from other cider makers in that we do a cold, slow fermentation. So our primary fermentation, instead of being 5 to 10 days, is running 4 weeks, 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm. And what temperature are you doing?
63. We'll bring it up to 67 to kick it off and then bring it
down.
If
it's having trouble.
Well, that doesn't sound too different from a lot of cider makers I talk to, though. Because it's like low and slow is like the mantra of cider making.
It is. It's very hard to do in this climate since we are more of a tropical climate. This area is actually listed as a subtropical forest, I believe.
Yeah. Mm. When we find out this way, there's a lot of the beer mentality.
Right.
Doing something a little faster.
And that it has a very definite audience that people are looking for that. You know, so one of the things when you sort of Google yourself, I found one of the criticisms that it tasted like wine. I was like, well, that was my goal. So I think...
No, this is exquisite.
Thank you.
Really exquisite. It's so well balanced. Mm-hmm. You know, it's exciting for me to have like a single variety from California. In this region, because nobody is doing a single variety in this region.
Gravenstein.
But further north.
Yeah, further north.
But nobody, none of the cider makers.
Some of them Nicole started to pick up this, but we were, we did do, this was our original concept.
Yeah.
Right? So that when we had, we were looking at what is our historic cider apple in the region, because you know that cider was made here prior to the Prohibition, just like it was everywhere.
Martinelli's.
Right. And so Martinelli's was a big part of holding on to that Newtown Pippin. That is their mainstay apple that creates that flavor. And so we wanted to revive that and to keep the Newtown Pippin alive.
Perfect.
It's beautiful. I think we really struggled with this, and we've stuck with the single varietal from our amateur days and just entering the county fair, and then to continue to evolve what we want. And part of that was working with the grower, working with a lab to find the correct yeast, and then temperature control to reduce any sort of like that sulfurous flavor that can sort of overpower.
So you. You had your roots in, like, making it at home?
Uh-huh.
Were you making something else, fermenting something else at home prior to that? You just, some people, you know, are making wine or making beer, but you went right into cider.
Well, we had, you know, when we first got together, we had talked about our hopes and our dreams, and one of it was, like, we wanted to own a winery. And then we sort of looked around and thought, you know, well, maybe not that. And then we, you know, again, we were kind of into some of this sort of English culture from, you know, what was that, your English mod, you know, sort of he was interested. Like, so that was sort of, like when his scooter
comes. Your Vespa going on.
We go to the pubs and I drink cider. Who's drinking Blackthorn?
Yeah, and so that's what we were sort of doing as sort of young people, and when we
hipsters,
we don't like to.
Oh my God, is that a bad word around here?
It is a bad word.
She has this whole story about how she looked at us and goes, "We're hipsters."
No, I realized that we were hipsters. He hates it when I tell this story, but I realized that we were I just kind of looked around, and I was like, "We look like hipsters."
Oh my God!
But you know what? She hates this.
We live in an A-frame.
I
say we're what hipsters want to be.
No. But we realize that, you know what? Easy. We don't ferment anything. And so
that's a story she tells. I hate the story.
So that's our husband and wife beef.
Oh, well, you know, you got to have something to go
right
with it.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. And you wanted a winery, and now you're cider makers.
We made
some righteous cider, by the way.
Yeah.
Right? Where did you get the information? Because this area has been kind of like void of that.
Totally nerdy.
Being a nerd.
Everything Andrew Lee ever wrote that I could find, I would read, books, and started studying apples.
So that's the Eric's really good into
Tilted Shed. Mm-hmm. And then we started picking their brains. It was like, hey, these people are a lot like us. And we went up there and talked to them. And then I was already pretty nerdy about the apples. And I wanted to do all the English stuff. And then since then, we've kind of come back to the Pippin. I'm like, no, I just like this.
It's
a good medium for both of us to get what we like, right? We both like it.
Yeah.
We want to make really like a classic historic kind of American cider that's more of a modern take on that.
Right, yeah, I think it's not, you can, instead of tasting the suffering of the apple, you can taste the warm climate and beautiful sun.
You saw the trees, they were looking pretty gnarly.
they were, but you know, you could tell, like, they had some serious stories.
Yeah.
They had gone through amazing experiences, like, you know, droughts and rains and earthquakes.
Yeah.
And still survived.
We asked them to dry farm
those apples, so that's part of why we're getting, not only are we keeping them on the tree longer, but we're also dry farming them as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I had a conversation with Jake yesterday about the tree apples coming in this year. He's like, well, I have some lovely 75-year-old trees. I'm like, I can't put those in some and call it pre-prohibition. They've got to be before 1920. But I'll take them. We'll just...
Okay, so now I get the name. That's where it comes from.
Everything is planted before the prohibition.
For this one.
Brilliant.
Oh, there we go.
Here comes our assistant.
Actually, Scarlett works in the lab sometimes measuring sulfite.
One of our science projects, we did this, being totally nerdy. We were teaching them about the relationship between pH and sourness and acidity. So we had this candy science book, but we have to take it farther, and we had to teach them the difference between malic acid and citric acid.
Hey! It's a wild
Drake
bunch.
Is our cider nerd. Our apple nerd.
Apple nerd, because...
He tells you whether it's good or bad. He'll make sure. Good. He's quality control.
Quality control.
He goes, at our old place, I planted a row of cider apple trees, and he would go and pick a Harry Masters Jersey chisel and bite into it. He's like, this is good. I'm like, really?
Right on.
Did you want to try some of this? This is that plum that I had described.
Yeah,
do you have different glasses so you can try
it? It goes right inside.
I can do it separately
as well. But this is the California native plums that I basically threw myself against those trees and said, don't cut them down. There's something that we could do with them. And as I researched it, I found out about jerkum. And that's where I found my old world recipe and used that to make so this is completely estate grown from all of our trees here. And it is an additive. So again, it gives it that beautiful pink color. And if you can even see it swirling around here, that's where you're getting a little bit more body, right? So you can even see the body that's going in there. And when you taste it, it does add a level of complexity. So I like to call that the original cider cocktail.
Yeah, the jerkum comes from the Cotswold region in the UK around the Victorian era.
Right, and so they were making
Wow, that brings a whole different dimension there.
It does. It does bring a different dimension. So when you're looking to celebrate for New Year's or whatever it is, it makes it, it gives it a different dimension, kind of elevates this to a cider cocktail and makes
it. I would like to say, though, that this pre-prohibition Pippin needs nothing.
No, it needs nothing. Needs nothing. So it doesn't.
Straight up. But yeah, but the plum is really...
Yeah,
may I have a little taste of that without?
Yeah,
I'm just kind of curious.
It is rather sharp, right? But it is completely foraged, right? It's a forage fruit.
It's pretty good on its own.
Wow.
It's a little tart.
What's the ABV on that, would you say?
It's 12.
12, okay.
So again, it gives you a little bit of added alcohol.
Yeah, we both did the Peter Mitchell class at separate times, and I did it with Claudia, who's one of the owners of Cider Junction.
Oh,
yeah,
she mentioned that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I took a winemaking course on top of that. So I did a winemaking course. Because I really wanted to, when I tasted cider and, you know, we had had several English ciders and we thought that they were closer to a wine than a beer, right? Yet in its own distinct category. So I wanted to get some of the tips from wine. So a lot of that is like looking at the yin, and that's where we really work closer to the lab. That's why we grow the way that we do and work really mm-hmm. closely with the grower mm-hmm. is to take that sort of winemaking approach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the apples for this cider were picked a month later than all the other fruit, all the other pippins in the valley. Picked them on a Friday, delivered them here Saturday. In the dark down there, and grinding and pressing.
What are you using to grind up your apples?
We have a 80-gallon basket bladder press.
Okay, bladder press.
And then we have a grinder from Osesco.
Yeah.
That just rips through stuff. We're going a little bit more, because it's just us and the kids.
Yeah.
We also supplement. We have one of the places down there, one of the other family little places down there, will pick up the fruit from Jake, and they'll wash it and press it, and we drop off the containers, and they fill the containers.
Oh, that's nice.
Before they run their juice run.
Oh, I see.
So they set up, and they juice for their market, and then they bring ours in, and they juice ours into the containers, and they keep track of this bin went into these containers, and...
So I wonder, is there any, like, maceration at all, you know, like letting it sweat the apples or anything like that?
Yeah.
Yes.
So when we do it, we bring them in, usually. So the last, this one here, there was no sweating because they didn't go into the cold storage. They came off the trees.
Right, directly.
And came directly out. When they come out of cold storage, we'll let them sit for a week before we grind them. And the place down there, when they do it for us, they pick them up on Wednesday and they press on Saturday. So they're out of cold storage. They're sitting out in the sun for 3 days.
But you don't find, like, when you bring them here and you have that control that you need to, like, grind them up and let the pumice kind of...
I like to have a really clean flavor. So again, it goes back to my sort of palate as the master blender, is that I like it really, really clean. So I don't allow the skins to get much contact with the juice, right? Clean. So in a winemaking...
What do you mean by clean there? Because, I mean, a lot of French cider makers often maceration.
Right. Well, we're making more of a California style. It's very dry, right? Whereas some of the French ones have either a funk or a little slight sweetness or both.
We grind and press,
and the apple,
and then the juice goes pretty much straight into one of our steel tanks.
And we also use only stainless steel, right? So we're trying not, like, so we will come out with a cider, as a small producer, we will come out with something that's more of like a French style or a little bit more funky. Yeah. But this is taken us several years to get to this level. And I'm very proud of this one.
We just move it through, wash them, grind them, press them, get them in there.
Sure, yeah. I was just kind of curious about that because, I mean, so many cider makers do use that, and I was just wondering what kind of complexity that would use offer to the Newtown Pippin. And I'm just curious, you know.
Yeah.
I think we would introduce a different yeast. So then again, when you're looking at some of the flavors that go in there, since I like something that's really well balanced, isn't, you know, sort of doesn't have any sort of leather aspect or anything like that, that I think that would maybe add.
Try to stay away from the cardboard and oxidize.
Yeah,
and
we don't.
Try to get to a crisp or clean.
Crisp. Just we think that is really. That's what we're doing with this apple.
Right. And we use other apples, like the Gravenstein, which it does a lot better with that sort of yeast. I think that when you have more of some of personally, from personal experience, I think that the yeast that grows on the Gravenstein is really strong.
And you get a little more funk out of it.
Yeah, every single Gravenstein around here has a particular little terroir, like a funk that I think it belongs with the skins of the apples. Mm-hmm. And so when we that's definitely something I would look at doing with a different apple variety. But since this has quite a bit of acids, and I'm so happy with the way it turned out. I don't mess with it too much.
Yeah, well, if you're onto something and you kind of found that, you can do that. So you have the pre-prohibition, you have the smoked. Are you?
We have a Gravenstein that we did last year. This year, what we're gonna do this year is we have just Pippin.
Just Pippin. You're sticking on your primary.
We have a dry farm Pippin, and we'll have the pre-prohibition Pippin, and we'll have these 75-year-old Pippins.
Nice. So we smoke some of these, and then we may use 75-year-old.
I like that.
Yeah.
Because they're not pre-prohibition. They're 75-year-old.
Right. Yeah. Didn't make the cut.
So that's interesting, because you kind of like a little niche here is around the timeline of the apple tree.
Yeah.
Which is a different twist, a different way to view it. And I like it because it lends itself a little bit of education for the consumer to be thinking about the history and the age of the apple trees and where they're coming from.
I wish we had some of the still cider from last year.
Yes, we made a still one.
Me too.
Yeah. It's from the same place.
Yeah.
Well, it's from the exact same place.
Wow.
Different trees, but it's from Corlea, the same area. And it is so different. It's like a European style Chardonnay, where this is very brut champagne like.
Different trees, so were they younger trees?
They were younger trees and they were dry farm, but they were from the same area. Mm-hmm. And but the same yeast. Same yeast, same area.
Yeah.
Younger trees.
Yeah. Well, the age of the tree, I really do think, makes a big factor on the apples.
I think so too. If you
the roots
look
go
at,
down, down, down.
I don't want to make anything. Yeah. If it's not over 100 years old.
Oh. Well, the roots get down so far.
Good by it. True cider geek.
That's 75. We might have to kind of. That's his job, right? So he deals with all the trees.
That's right. Yeah. Well,
gotta give him his ring there.
There it is, the yin and the yang sock, and there it is.
He said, but that's what we're doing on the trees, and that's what we do.
Well, he's been telling me for like 2 months, and I'm like. And then when he said that he didn't really have enough, the trees didn't produce enough, I'm like, okay.
This is a bad year.
I guess I'll take it.
It's only 75 storm.
Years old.
A storm came in.
It's only 75 years old. I love it.
A storm came in the middle and knocked off all the buds. So that's part of the problem with this year's harvest.
Yeah.
They were having troubles even with the staff to pick them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm really liking Jake growing for us.
Yeah, Jake does. Jake is an amazing person. We're talking Ciderville about Jake Mann, who is also known as the 5 Mile Orchard, and is just quite the dude in this area for really connecting with cider makers and creating this community. Let's talk a little bit about the community out here. You're on the hills of Santa Cruz, or Santa Cruz Mountains is where you're at, right?
Yeah.
We're in Los Gatos address, but Santa Cruz County. So we're in this nobody wants us kind of.
Yeah, it's called No Man's Land.
If nobody wants you, I sign up. I want you.
Sign up.
I want you. I want you. Big time. Yeah, you got it going on.
Yeah.
So there's this little community. Is there like little cider clubs around here? Are people meeting? Do you have like cider meetups in that way or tasting?
No. We've been trying. I talked to Jake and we say that we're going to start like a cider geek.
Mm-hmm. Or a salon. I talked to Jake about doing like a salon.
She wants to, they talk about doing like a professional thing. I talk about a bunch of nerdy cider makers sitting in the shed. And just
drinking and talking about what you have, because there's it's a little bit what just happened with your new really there's no difference except it was in New York City where you had people sitting around with that single variety, Newtown Pippin, yours being one of them.
I wish I could have been there.
Exactly. And when you know, part of it is building that like infrastructure of education and people locally to your area who are going to be geeking out, and those geeks will then spread the word.
Right.
And it'll build upon your community and your commerce in that way.
Well, we have
so win-win.
started our geekdom with our fellow cider makers. I really, when we were a part of the cider scene, we've been part of the cider scene for 6 years now.
Something like that.
Right, so we were...
Yeah, well, when did you go commercial?
3 years ago, I think.
That's a fun story, actually.
Oh, let's hear it. Let's hear it. I want to hear a fun story. Okay.
So, that story. So, like she said, I just brought home a kit and said, let's make some cider.
What do you mean a kit? Like
a brew kit. And,
okay, but not like
a
juice.
Wine. No,
because
no.
They do sell cider juice kits.
We did go to Apple Hill and brought back some juice from Apple Hill and fermented that.
Where's that at? Where's Apple Hill?
Placerville.
Placerville.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's a whole Apple.
Placerville?
Mm-hmm. Placerville,
yeah.
Okay.
So Apple Tourism place, they do a lot of... You can find it, if you look in the back fridges there, you go around and it's supposed to be apples and juice. If you look in the back fridge, and you can kind of sometimes pick up some good...
Some cider. Some juice they've got let's sit around.
Wait, is that on the other side of San Jose?
No, it's up by Sacramento.
Near Sacramento.
It's on the way to Nevada.
And that was an apple, or is it apple growing?
It's an apple growing region.
A U-pick style, just like New York has their upstate New York apple region. Mm. Like, you know, they'll have farm animals or petting zoos.
Right, the whole thing.
Yeah, okay. So we brought some juice back and... I made some stuff, and she's like, it's all right. And then I got some stuff from Trader Joe's, and she's like, ah. And I thought, well, I'll stick some oak in it. So I put some oak in it. I had a one-gallon jug, and I put some oak in it. And then we went down to Gizditch and bought some juice from them. And that was where we started with the Newtown Pippin, was that. And I brought that home, and I was trying out some ale yeast, and she's like, ah, it's got some funk. And then this California cider competition came up, and she's like, you have to send something.
Right, I was like, we gotta compete. Like this is part. This is our chance to have our own winery, right? Is to do this.
Rev it up.
Yeah. And I was like, no, you know, I just kind of knew that you kind of had to grab that market.
Yeah.
And we did, and we started the competition. We won a silver, I think, that year, and we were also judges, but we didn't judge our own stuff, right? You know, that happens.
Yeah, probably not a good idea.
Yeah, of course. No, they arranged it that way. But,
of course.
But one of the things that opened my eyes into that, hey, we could do this commercially, was that I knew that we were judged against all the professionals. That when we got that silver, it was well earned. It wasn't just given away. That no, you know, that getting a bronze was actually a feat in that particular competition, since it was brand new.
Yeah.
And we knew that, hey, well, if you know, this particular brand got a silver and we love it and so did we, well then, hey, let's do it. So we did.
So you went to the competition.
So what happens is I had a couple ciders that were funky. I'm like, no, I'm not sending these. They're awful. And Katie comes along and she's like, well, let's mix a little bit with this and a little bit with that. And she took stuff that all sucked. It was all horrible. And when she was done with it, I'm like, wow, this is really good.
Mm-hmm. We've actually gotten to the point where I am kind of kicking myself out of a job where there's nothing that needs to be done. That we've done such a great job in selecting the apple variety, growing it to specifications, to having already selected the yeast and experience with the yeast, that nothing
but
is bad anymore.
But everything's made in her palate.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But so you're tasting it along the way while Eric's making it.
Right, yeah. Right. Okay. And I go down and spend time with Jake, looking at the trees, taste it, and telling him, is it time to pick? Like, he would like to have picked a couple weeks ago.
Right.
Yeah. And we have them stay on the tree because they weren't quite ready.
Good. Well, that's what's a little bit unique here when people are not orchard-based and they're getting the apples from elsewhere, is they don't always have that option to go out and taste the orchard.
We work really closely.
Yeah,
like
and you taste that. Yeah, of course you do.
In the Newtown Pippin versus the Gravenstein, right? So you do see some single variety of Gravensteins here. Is the Gravenstein actually falls off the tree much earlier, right? And it even ripens on the ground.
They don't hang them on the trees. So they just fall.
They just fall. Mm-hmm. So the Newtown Pippin is sticking on the tree longer.
What an amazing experience to be able to taste plums from these old trees on the side of your hill in the Santa Cruz Mountains. I mean, that's what terroir is about. It's
it
like
is.
Being connected to where it came from. And so, I mean, where could I go in the world to have that? Except
that's
like right here.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So again, we have the Saccharomyces yeast is coming in through here with our old homestead. You know, having you know, animals that were living here a couple hundred years ago helped sort of
keep that up.
Yep.
So there's more of a on the oak trees. You have the Saccharomyces paradoxus, which is interesting. The Saccharomyces paradoxus, and we've been doing a little bit of experimenting.
What's Saccharomyces paradoxus?
Saccharomyces paradoxus is a cousin to the Saccharomyces cerevisiae. And it's one that will actually work in the wine stuff.
Because it gets in a little bit higher, where you get your higher alcohol. Rather, some of those other native yeasts only get to like 2, 3, 4%, and we're getting to more like in the 19%.
We're doing some experimenting. I'll let you taste one of the experiments. It's a Newtown Pippin that's a blend of Saccharomyces cerevisiae and Saccharomyces paradoxus. And the Saccharomyces paradoxus converts not all the sugar to CO2 and alcohol, it converts some of it to glycerol. So you get body and you get sweet. So it ferments completely dry, but it's got a...
That sweetness.
Sweetness
there,
and body and...
Residual.
Like the pre-prohibition Pippin, it's like... Well,
it doesn't get much better than that.
I don't really love your junction. I just drink my own cider.
I know. I fooled myself.
I mean, I really love your plum, but I'm like... Oh,
right, I know. We'll give you another glass. We'll give you another glass. Don't worry about that.
Okay,
right?
Another bottle,
right? These we actually have lots of these.
I'll even put a label on one and send you home with a bottle.
Awesome, yes. Great! I'd love to bring it back to my spot of Ciderville and share that. Are you going to be able to walk down the hill?
Yes. And we can do that now since the kids are getting a little rowdy.
Okay. These come out, actually, but
I can do it.
I get tired of this, like the Belgian corks, and you have to like work it out.
Where is it available? If people want to come and get it. The farmer's market is where again?
We have stopped selling at the farmer's market until the new year. So
right.
Back
so it's
in
like
June, we'll be back in there.
June till?
Well, we exited early this year so that we could...
Through Thanksgiving.
Wow. Through Thanksgiving.
June through Thanksgiving, and that is what, farmer's market?
We were the Scotts Valley and the Santa Cruz farmer's market.
Oh, good. Okay, Santa Cruz farmer's market. Because I know there's one in downtown Santa Cruz, too.
We do just the west side and the Scotts Valley.
Okay. It may change next year, so it's always good to look on our website to see where we are.
Okay. And Scotts Valley, Cider Junction?
Cider Junction at this time.
Yeah, we're on Keg
on tap there, which is so worth going.
It is. Actually, it's really
so exciting.
Great.
So is this going to be an open tasting room here to the public at some point? Is that what you're...
It's open by appointment only. So
you can
make an appointment. We are looking
at... Would be so worth it, Ciderville. If you're in this area, and I know a lot of you come through here, you have to get a hold of Erica Katie, ride a ranch right off the Highway 17, and they might find themselves a little bit more busy than they expect.
I hope so. Come on, everybody.
They are people you want to hang out with.
Right. Actually, make an appointment. You can look for us.
Yes,
you can contact us on, you know, through our email.
Yeah. There's
no
signage or anything, so you're going to have to get the passcode.
Right.
Like every batch of cider is made to the apples.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have anything that has been aged less than 9 months.
Ever.
I'd like to thank Katie and Eric of Rider Ranch Cider Works in Santa Cruz County between San Jose and Monterey Bay. If you want to check out their ciders and have a tasting, do contact them. Just go to the show notes for this here episode 110. There is just so much going on in 2018, and conversations like this one with Katie and Eric really inspire me. You learn about dry farming, which is, you know, what they do in California, and they don't have the kind of irrigation that you have in other areas. And so you're going to have that kind of very high sugared apple and really dense and rich taste that's really sun-kissed, no doubt, and sometimes a little burned and on the outside, and I'm almost giving it like a caramely taste. Having walked through Five Mile Orchard with Jake Mann, who they were talking about, and actually tasting the apples there with him was an eye-opener for me, because I'm so used to orchards in my spot of Ciderville in New England, which are really, really different than the profile of apples that you're going to get from California. Both equally great and very unique. So there's a lot happening in the Monterey area that I am very thrilled to be kind of talking about at this early stage of its growth and meeting the people who are really pushing the envelope, such as Robbie Honda from Tanuki Cider Company, who we had on this chat a couple weeks ago. We also had Nicole Todd of Santa Cruz Cider Company. Folks, I really enjoy. I want to say that on New Year's Eve, I had their single varietal Gravenstein. Oh my goodness, that was a champagne method that they use for that cider from Santa Cruz Cider Company. Insanely delicious. They're really dovetailing what's going on with the wine community and what they have for their own kind of like entrepreneurial spirit in that area of Monterey Bay. Then you just go over the mountains and towards San Jose, you have Cider Junction. We just had Claudia and Tracy on from Cider Junction. You should check out that chat. So when you fly into San Jose, then you go up north and you're hitting the whole Sonoma region of amazing cideries like Ethic Cider. You also heard them mention Tilted Shed. You have a Crooked City Cider Company over in Oakland. And between San Jose and California, San Francisco, there's a bevy of cideries too. Heading out towards Sacramento, there is the Apple Hill area. That is a cider place too. A lot to be noticing. California is a huge state, and they have apples, and they've been there for a really long time, and it's just kind of an exciting time for it. Really stoked for that. Also stoked to remind you to sign up today. Do not delay for the Totally Cider Tour to the UK with that humongous price drop of $900 to set you on your way. It might be like $895, $900 is the round number up. I mean, it's all the same. That's a chunk of change in your pocket to make it happen. So do go to ciderchat.com, the Totally Cider page. Get the links there. Contact Jody. Limited time offering. And I really hope to see you in Somerset at Bristol, the city of Bristol, and going to the Ultimate Cider Experience at the Stable on April 25th. It will blow your mind, and then to dance in the apple orchards with you. I'll be dancing in there. Maybe I'll find some folks who like to dance too and kick up our legs a bit. That would be a blast. In the meanwhile, it is cold outside. Perfect time for making ice cider, and I think I'm going to go get a little sip of that now and get this podcast published out to you. In the meanwhile, I hope that you have a good time between now and next week when we are back with Cider Chat. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Going up.
Yeehaw!